We've all had fierce and formidable women in our lives who have shaped who we are now. The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is dedicated to celebrating women who have shaped the education landscape more than you can possibly imagine. Who better to host this conversation than Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson, two fierce and formidable women who have been driving innovation in the field of the education world for more than 30 years. Please welcome our hosts, Drs. Keisha Ray and Frances Gibson.
Welcome to episode number 10 of Tech and Learning's Honor Roll, a podcast that celebrates the amazing women in education. I'm Keisha Ray.
Yes, she is the amazing Keisha Ray, and I'm Frances Gibson. And we are so delighted that you are here to join us today in this podcast environment. And as expected, we're not letting you down. We have another fierce and formidable female joining us today. Today, our guest is Nzinga Dugas. And Nzinga is a Shiro. And let me tell you a little bit about her career and knowing that there's much more to come. And let's see if you feel the same. So she's the executive director of the Emoja Community Education Foundation, which operates over 68 programs across California, my home state, 114 community college system. Her role includes leading the foundation's central office team, the northern and southern statewide regional staff, and overseeing all the operations, a feat in and of itself. She's also the founding director of Oakland Unified School District's inaugural African-American Female Excellence Initiative. So much talent and so many more stories to hear from Nzinga.
This is a great time to celebrate Shiros. It's a great year and it's a great month to celebrate Shiros. Nzinga is clearly one of our Shiros in education, and we're fortunate to explore our M's with you. In fact, each podcast, we explore models of leadership together by asking our guests what they see in the mirror, so a reflection of themselves, who are their mentors that have impacted them or influenced them. And with this in mind, we turn to movements we should be watching and get ready for maverick moments.
And Keisha, don't forget, we want to make sure we catch any of those phrases or ideas that we don't explain. Sometimes folks call this the edge babble out there, to make sure our listeners understand exactly what is being said. And I caught something that definitely deserves some explaining when I was introducing our leader. So Nzinga, I'm wondering, could you share with us a little bit more about this inaugural African-American Female Excellence Initiative? What does our audience need to know about this mission and this experience with this?
Absolutely. Good morning, everyone. In the Oakland Unified School District and just in the Oakland Bay area, there was a lot going on with our children inside of that district. And I had been working with girls for many, many years. Even when I had a full-time job, I still was doing community development. And so there was a point where the concern was raised around boys of color. Mm-hmm. And so there was a real focus on boys of color, but I had always underscored with the community of women that I work with that you can't speak to one set of youth without speaking to the other set of youth. And I had said for a long time, and so had so many other women, that we really have to pay attention to what's happening with girls. And the understanding was, let us do this first, and then in a couple years, we'll focus on girls of color. Well, that turned into 9 years. And at some point, the girls in the community begin to raise their voice. And so I can't take personal credit, because the women and the girls, we were all raising our voice and we all had those concerns. And we were just seeing some things that were just not healthy for our children. And so that push drove them to create this initiative. There was a donor, a woman, who said, I see it. I hear you all. I believe you all. And they she put money towards this initiative. And so I became the founding director of that initiative that would focus on primarily African-American girls, but girls of color in the Oakland Unified School District, but really do it as a community partnership to address their educational needs and then what happens to them when they're away from the educational setting. And so it was very very exciting because we were able to build the project from the ground up with girls in mind, and they participated fully in the development of the project.
Wow, that's incredible. That's an incredible vision. And you know, as you were describing it, I was seeing that that image that was shared when Michelle Obama's portrait was hung, and the young girl that kind of walked in front of it and just stared up like, this could be me one day, you know? And that just resonates so much with me, and I'm sure with so many people that are listening. Now let's start with our first M models. Are you ready?
Yeah.
All righty. Who are your role models and why?
The wonderful thing in my life is so many women have crossed my path and at each point in my life have made an impact. And that really started with my sisters. I have six sisters, all older than me. And so they really set the tone for what to do and what not to do in so many ways. And then when I started college, I was lucky to have a woman who targeted me named Dr. Penny Saffo. She actually just recently passed. But I was roaming around college and I was trying to figure out my identity. I was super shy. And she pointed to me and she said, I see you in these different spaces and I see your leadership. I want you to come see me. She was Dean of Students and the Associate Vice President for Student Affairs. And so, of course, I said yes, politely, as you're supposed to do, but I disappeared. I disappeared. I'm like, you won't see me again. I don't know what it means to come to your office. So of course I started to like, let me try student organizations. Let me just try to find my way. And college really allows for you to do that. That's why I really believe in education, because it allows you to find your identity. And so she saw me again a couple months later and she said, didn't I tell you to come see me? Which is something my aunts would say. That's something my mother would have said, right? Very comfortable. So at that point it was like, I need to come see you. And so she had her assistant find me. I sat with her and she said, I see your leadership and I'm going to be there by your side. She didn't have any prescription. Like, I'm going to mentor you. She said, I'm going to be by your side. And all through my college career, she was there with advice, wisdom. And so, you know, we would go by her house. She just really provided a strategic pathway to think about our own leadership and was really supportive. I think she might have been considered what was a new age, where she might tell you should do things, but she also respected that you had to learn to make your decisions. And so she covered me and a bunch of other women all the way through. And when she passed, right when COVID started, and they asked me to speak about her, I wrote a story about who she was in my life. There was not a dry eye in the house. I had to practice in order to really say it, because she had such an impact on my development in college, and college really developed me.
There is no doubt that Dr. Saffold still sees you. And you see that impact that she has had on you. And I'm glad you didn't disappear and you show up each and every day. And in fact, it sounds like you've also had a lot of great mentors in addition to these amazing role models. My hunch is that your models are not only local, but they're national leaders that many of us admire. And we all know that we're not alone in this journey as mentors. And so I'm wondering, who are some of your mentors who has continued to traverse this social justice pathway with you?
So there's two people, one living and one past. And I'll just share very quickly that the person that was really important just in terms of my leadership is Ella Baker, particularly around young people. And Ella Baker was a civil rights icon, and she always pushed for students. And she was in the likes of Martin Luther King and Ralph Abernathy. But the thing about her, for women at that time, they were not allowed in those spaces. And she insisted on being in those spaces specifically to advocate for students and student voice. piece because the students were the ones who were marching and who were pushing society to be a more humane society. And so when I look to her, she is so important in that. And she really talks about giving people the light and they will find the way. And that's what I see my role as. Let me flick on the light and then you can see all the possibilities, all the potentialities as a young person, if we just can facilitate that light coming on. A current role model is Arnold Perkins, and he's a former health leader. He's really well known in the Bay Area. And he's so important because not only has he been a strategic partner for myself and my partner, but also my students. And so when my students, particularly male students, they really needed to look at a male role model, I would turn them over to him. And Arnold Perkins, even today, if I call him and I say, I got a really tough situation, can you be a thought partner? He never says no. He always gives clear advice, but he does it from the lens of what's good for the person that is asking for the advice. Not what I think based on what I see. He often will look at me and say, here's what I see based on what you're telling me. And he's mentored so many people and he's just very clear about who he is in his responsibility to lift up community. And so I certainly have a bunch of others, my professors who I'm still in contact with, and they remind me that I was a good student, meaning that I was able to take what they were saying and develop it. But those are the people that I keep with me all the time. Certainly, I just want to say my mother, because my mother had 9 children. I don't know who has 9 children and can manage, you know, all those children. But my mother, because in some ways she didn't have a choice, and we were her college, we were her life, and she put as much as she could into us, and she did the best she could with what she had. And so her struggle to really make sure we had everything that we need is what underpins how I do my work.
Wow, very powerful. And you are so clear about who you are and what you're committed to. And it sounds like the people who have been kind of on your path have really helped you establish that within yourself, which is such a blessing. So at what point did you look in the mirror and know that you were a leader?
That's such a really good question, because I don't know if you ever look in the mirror and you really say I'm a leader. Particularly, I would say it's true for many women and the women that are in my space, in my leadership space with me. I don't know if you know that, but it becomes clear for the people who you're helping by your leadership. And so one of my professors used to say all the time, and this really resonates with me, is that leadership is not about selecting yourself. It is about the community looking at you, seeing your leadership qualities, and them wanting to represent you. And so much today, we identify ourselves and we step forward. And he really argued that if you're not selected by the community or the people you represent, you really have to examine whether you should be in that leadership position. So I've always tried to be an activist and an advocate in my role. And then if the community sees fit to say, we think you should represent us, that's when I think you know you're a leader or that you're seen as a leader. And there's been key moments where I have been selected and I was like, no, thank you. No, thank you. Only to circle back to my mentors who said, you don't really have a choice. The community sees you as being able to represent their very needs, and it's dishonorable for you to say no. And that always hit me hard, because that doesn't happen every time. And that's why I believe the universe lines itself up to select people at different times, different moments, for different things that we need to look at. And so I try to be very thoughtful of always using my voice in support of those who can't. And then if the community sees fit, then I step up. And then I just get to work. I don't know if you can look in the mirror, you're just like, this is where you are. So get busy on being the leader that they've asked you to be.
Well, indeed, you must be incredibly busy. This we know, because there is such clarity in your voice. There's voice advocacy. And in these examples of these different mirrors and models, reflective so much, as you mentioned, of community, they're testimonies of your best self, as you've mentioned. And you've also connected that voice with so many different professors. There's a pattern around that. And now you're on this path to pursue your own PhD and perhaps be one of those professors in addition to the amazing things that you've done. And so as an incredibly strong woman yourself, what are some of your views on how you see women as a group really changing the world?
It is so exciting, you know, right now to watch so many intergenerational women who are coming to the forefront. I've been thinking about this for so long, but just watching Amanda Gorman make that amazing poem, I don't know how you could keep any tear in your eye, and in her regalness and how she stood up and really made us think about it. There's been so many courageous young women who have stepped forward, but I'm just seeing women open the door to every single avenue. When you think we're the fastest growing business owners, even in spite of COVID, I'm on so many different lists where women are creating things, they're trying things. I'm seeing my former students, and I said, I'm gonna be a mess just looking at how wonderful women are to say, in spite of all the things that are going on that say we do not have a place somewhere, we are making space. We are making space. And Shirley Chisholm talked about it, you know, essentially, if there's not a chair for you at the table, bring your own chair. We are bringing our own chairs to the table. And it's overwhelming. One of my former graduate students from UC Berkeley is now on the legal counsel to the Biden administration. And just amazing. One of my former students was an intern for Michelle Obama. And she used to sit on my couch in my office at UC Berkeley and talk about writing this paper or trying to tutor, and just, I'm worn out, Ms. Nzinga. And to see folks just creating for themselves is amazing. And so I have this belief, and I'm probably going to get in trouble, but that women are going to be the ones to make this world a better place. There's no doubt. Women are the only key, I mean it, the only key to change the current situation that we're in, because we are the ones that humanize. We're the ones that bring the culture. This doesn't mean that other people don't have a role. Everybody has a role. I've just seen so many powerful women make a huge difference in spite of all the odds that are against us. And so what I see for us, particularly with the election of this new administration and Kamala Harris being the VP, is we're gonna see a different world. In the next 20 to 30 years, we're gonna see some real difference. It's just gonna be up to us to make sure that we're making a humane and just society for everyone.
Oh, I need that in a poster. Billboard. And I think Frances shared this week with me a PowerPoint kind of show that has all of these women that are leading countries. And, you know, it ends with Kamala Harris, but, you know, she's one step closer than any other woman's ever been to that seat. And it's just so profound. And I think a lot of people are watching Amanda Gorman right now as a woman, a young woman who's disturbing the system. You know, I think as women, you said, you know, you've got plenty of examples in your life where you've pivoted to just keep it going. And during COVID, you just mentioned, we've got so many women who've, you know, I've become unemployed, I'm going to start up my own business. Mm-hmm. I do this, I'm going to do this. You know, we don't just give in, we get up.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of women who've pivoted. So who have you seen? Who resonates with you that we should watch or that others should watch?
Who I, you know, let me count. there's the young woman who is focusing on educating girls. So we know that was Michelle Obama's, you know, big thing. Malala, who is doing that work, you know, she had that horrible situation that happened to her because she wanted to learn. And she could have shrunk, you know, given that, you know, she had the scarring on her face and she was really just thrown away to die. But that she's using her voice to say girls have a right to be educated is very different from where we are. But not so long ago, my own mother could not go to school. And it was her grandfather who helped build a school on their land so that everybody in that community could go to school. She couldn't because of segregation. And so when I think about her, I think it is just... she is so powerful in her voice and in standing tall in her voice. You know, I'm just trying to think of like, you know what? I just listened to Claremont University's presentation of Yara Shahidi. And so they had her as a special guest. And so she's on one of the shows that I don't watch, my daughter watches. I think it's like Grown-ish, one of the shows. But she's been doing this campaign on voting rights, and she's like 21, and she is so profound in how she's thinking about opening the door for voting for young people. And I have voted since I was 18. That was just, you were going to vote in my family. But there's so many young people who don't feel like their voice matters. And to listen to her articulate her vision, the people that she's working with, how she's moving across different communities. I'm telling you, I'm so impressed to watch her and tell her story around how she's making room for young people to vote. And she's working with other young people to do that. I just think it's amazing. And so she comes to mind because not only is she now a star doing the show, she's also still in college and she's an activist who, I mean, who can do all that, you know, and really hold all of that down. But that's what I said. That's the power of women. That's the power of women, that, you know, the ability to say, I have a vision. I need to make that vision a design. And I also need to work and build out who I am as a person. So I'm very, very impressed with her.
You definitely have that same power. There is no doubt if we were all sitting next to one another, we could definitely feel that energy beyond even just this podcast space. You know, I know Keisha and I have talked about in this environment, once it's safe again to be present physically with one another, we want all these sheroes to come together because your energy, all of these women with such powerful insight and connections to even this greater community are indeed changing our world in the present and in the future. I think much of this work that we do is by design. It's intentional. Even your name and the intention behind your name, which I'm sure you will share, helps us to think about how we are warriors as women. And in order to be a warrior, and as you know, I've always said, I am wowed by you. You are just so incredible. And it's such a blessing and an opportunity to have intersect in your education journey together. And I wonder so often, like, how do you take care of you so that you can be this warrior? So what recommendations might you provide to other women to find that balance and that self-care so that, in fact, they can bring that chair to that table?
One thing that I really had to learn, Frances, is that seeking balance is something that is an ongoing process. You don't really get to balance And I had to understand this probably in the last five years, we're like, I just need to balance. I've got all these things going on. Balance is an ongoing process that you have to participate in. And you have, the goal is to circle back and to say, okay, things are out of alignment. So I need to take that time. And so it is an evolutionary lifelong process to seek balance and to bring that back into your life. And so one of the things I try to start with, and it's not often, but it is, what are my intentions? And when I say it's not often, this is where the balance comes in. I try to, out of 7 days, can I write my intentions for at least 4 days? And to say, what are my intentions? And I try to put them in two realms. What do I want to get done for the work that I'm doing? Because I think that is what the universe gives you as your gift to humanity. So what do I want to do? And then what are the intentions for myself? How am I carving out a piece for myself? And then what are my intentions for my loved ones? And so sometimes those come at different times. Sometimes it's work and then my loved ones. So I need to call my sister today. I need to call my other sister tomorrow. But then sometimes for me, I've learned to say, okay, let me stop. And tonight everything goes off and you just dance. You turn on your favorite music and you just dance. And I have a little, this little stone or rock that a colleague gave to mine that sits right front and center in my living room. And it says, just dance. And so I keep that there where sometimes that's exercise. You know, exercise is boring. So what it exercises me when I dance, and then it just frees me, just let it go. And I want to give you something that another young woman gave to me, because this is also balanced to me, having intergenerational women in your life. I always believe have somebody your age, because that's where you're going to talk stuff about in your age range. You're going to have fun. Have somebody older who can help you realign and say, okay, you're out of alignment. That's very helpful, because older sisters, older friends love to tell you what to do, right? So have that so where they can say, you're doing too much. Then have a younger person to remind you of who you are and that energy. I want to show you what a younger person gets. I hadn't intended on doing this, Francis, but this is a jar. It says today was a good day, but it's a gratitude jar. And so she had me make it, and it says on the top, enjoy every moment. And she was going to make one for me. I said, no, don't do that. Let me do it for myself, because that's part of my balance. So in that jar, I try to put in every day. Again, it's not every day, so don't beat yourself up. I put the thing that I have gratitude for. What is the thing that I have gratitude for? Because I realize there are things that other people don't have. And so that's really, really important. I would just say one other thing inside of COVID that I wasn't doing, because I can focus on work and be a workaholic, is force us to see the universe that we live in. And I think the universe is doing in some ways a reset. So we're seeing like the stars and the sun. So get out of that chair and take a walk. Take a walk wherever you are. Find a way to take a walk and take pictures. And so I find pictures of flowers that are just growing in the concrete, flat, you know. And then I exchange that with my daughter, and I have this picture thing. But I realized that my mom would do that too. She would take pictures of the weirdest things and send them to us. Taking that walk, and that's what I try to do when I take that walk. And then I ask myself those questions. What am I giving to me to take care of me? Not the retail therapy, not any of that, but what am I giving to my spirit? What am I giving to my spirit? Because this is one thing I do live by, is that when you go to sleep, if you are given the blessing to wake up and breathe, you have another opportunity to try whatever you didn't get right yesterday, that next day. So if I'm breathing and I'm living, that means you get another chance to figure it out. And I feel like that's the blessing.
Oh, that is a blessing. And what a beautiful suggestion of the gratitude jar. And, you know, we can also challenge our listeners to take a walk while they're listening to this podcast. And now we're going to move to a little dance of insight that we play with our guests. And we're going to ask you some questions and like sentence starters. And we want you to complete the sentence.
Okay.
I'm going to get that sentence started. But before you respond to it, I want you to clarify Francis's kind of tease about your name. So you're going to need to clarify that for our amazing listeners and then answer this question. An event that changed my worldview.
Okay. So my name, it's part of what we do in our culture, which is to do a naming ceremony. So many of you may know that when our ancestors were brought over during the enslavement process, we lost the ability to name ourselves. And when you are named in African culture, your name speaks to what the elders see in you. So if I take my daughter, her name is Noni, and it means a gift of God. And because I felt at the time that I decided to have children, I actually made the decision to do that. And so my name means a couple things, but most importantly, it means warrior. And so my mother used to say, Beth, when I was four, is when she first started seeing me advocate for other children. And I would come home and I wouldn't get in trouble for not doing what I was supposed to do. It would be because I would be defending somebody. And it is so funny because I had a teacher and I was defending a student who had, she had some illness and she wore crutches, full body crutches. And they were teasing her and I was defending her. And I remember my teacher scolded me because I was defending her and said I should have came and told the teacher. But then she winked at me, which I knew that was okay. And so my mother said, I have always been that warrior fighting for others, that I would take punishment and blame myself when my sisters and brothers would do stuff. And she said, that's always been in you. So part of my naming process, which happens at different parts of your life, is I was named that. As a warrior because of always trying to seek justice for others, even before I seek it for myself. So that's what my name means, warrior.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that and the beautiful history of the naming ceremony. Mm-hmm. I do think that is such a beautiful, beautiful ceremony. Okay, now, my friend, changing the world, your worldview. What did it?
I'm thinking of so many, but I will say what changed my worldview really is when I hit college and I started to see at that point the inequities in education. And I don't think I was so nuanced or so conscious to understand the larger impact of, you know, how education systems came to be. I just understood my own experience and the experience of my colleagues when I would see things not fair in systems and structures. And though I come from a working class family and we could afford college, I could go to work and afford college. I began to see people who really couldn't. And I just really believe that education, like many of my ancestors, is about freedom, that the more education you get, the more you can free yourself. And I just saw that there were people who didn't have access to education. And that was very difficult for me to see because you don't always like what goes on inside the classroom. But you can love to learn. And I love to learn. And I just couldn't understand why everybody wouldn't have the opportunity if they chose to learn. I've always felt like education should be free because through natural attrition, people will, you know, make space. You know, sometimes you gotta go take care of your family. Sometimes you gotta step out for a minute that if everybody had access. And so I think when I came to college and I saw who wasn't there or I saw who didn't have access, it pulled at my heartstrings because I think that's one of the things that my parents tried to do for us is to make sure we always had access to education. And so I don't know if it was a single event. It was just noticing when I got to college who did not have access and wondering why they didn't have access.
So warrior, we're going to continue dancing with these ideas. Here's our next one. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. My life improved when I...
When I really started to understand caring for self and spirit. when I really understand what that meant, because you can go out and you can do this wonderful humanitarian social justice work, but if you don't care for yourself, you're not good for anyone. And that's not a way to model. And I think what I learned from my mother, who seemed to never stop, that she did not take time for herself. And so I've had to really say, how do you take care of yourself so you can take care of others, and really set those boundaries, where I just learned to stop. It's an ongoing struggle to say no in a loving way. So I try to teach those who I mentor, you don't have to say no right out, but you can say, I can't do this for you right now. But this is when I am available. This is when I can do it. Or here's somebody who is available and they would be awesome for this. And to let go of that, to not say, well, I got to do it. You know, I have a staff member who believes what, you know, many of us believe growing up, if you want something done right, do it yourself. No, ma'am. No. Because right is relative, and you can turn it over to somebody else. And nothing is ever going to be right in the way that you think it needs to be right. But there are other rights. And that's what I had to learn, really, in order to self-care. Okay, that's the way they do it, and I'm good with that. And if I'm there this way, I'm going to do it, and that has to go. And that's a big lesson to learn. And I think that's, I don't know for everybody else, I have a lot of women in my life, and I see that running through a lot of women, that we do it ourselves and we don't do that self-care. And so at some point we burn out. There's a, you know, there's some older work done on burnout, and it was done by a former supervisor, Christina Maslach, and she really began to look at burnout as a developmental process in psychology very early on. I want to say probably in the 80s. And her work is, and it's really still true today. If you burn out, you're not of service to yourself or anybody else that you care about.
Carol, now I know why you're on our podcast. Yep. Frances is on me all the time because I struggle so much with self-care, and you have got it going on. And I think that's so beautiful. So beautiful. And you're so strong. You're just such a strong, strong lady. I just admire that so much in you. But there has to be a point, my friend, when you became even stronger. Sounds like you came into the world pretty strong, but there has to be a point along your journey where you became even stronger. Can you define that point?
Yeah. And I just want to offer that oftentimes we're strong on the outside and then we're crumbling on the inside. And I think that's when I became stronger, when I realized, you know, I can do all this stuff to hold up the world, but when I got home, I still had to look at me and I had to face me. And so I had to, it was a woman who told me, I just tell you, you know, just we are the universe's, you know, special entities. And I will say I became a stronger person when I decided what's an executive coach told me, when she said, well, Ziggy, you try this and this and this and that. And she said, none of that's working. So why don't you just stand? And so it's when I decided to just make a clear, conscious stand in the face of diversity. And I always stood, but I always was very an overthinker about it. You know, is this a good time? Is this diplomatic? Should I do it? And just decide to stand. And if people could not deal with you standing, that's not your problem. That's theirs. As long as you do it in a loving, clear way, and it's not, you know, it's not intended to hurt, but, you know, in the face of adversity and an unpopular opinion, stand. Stand, because when you go home, you still got to look at you and take care of that shell and that spirit that is you. So stand. And that's really, I would say, probably over the last 5 years, because I've had fighting for girls in Oakland. I had to stand because I began to fight for girls. And then the women who were fighting for girls, I had to stand for them. And I just continue to have in my mind that self-thought of stand. And then leave it for the table to determine. But you don't have to go home and then raise questions for yourself. Did I stand? Did I say the right? I've stood. And people can receive it or not, but I'm gonna continue to stand. And that's the last 5 years in various situations where I had to come home and ask myself those very questions. How do you feel good when you get home? And that's just getting better and better. It's like aged wine. It just, when you stand, it gets better and better.
And I think you've shared that it's never too early to stand. You know, I think back to my kindergarten class when you're bringing up a memory of, I had a poster in there. It says, stand up for what you believe in, even if you're standing alone. You know, with your examples of Gorman and your own journey, it's never too early to stand. As you think about standing in your presence and who you are as a woman, share with us a decision that changed your life forever.
Yeah, I think being a mom, and we had our daughter and then we adopted two of our nephews. And we both come from large families, and we just didn't understand why these two children would potentially go into foster care. So I went from no kids to within 2 years, three kids. but the thing about being a mom is your children will tell you who you are and who you're not. And you gotta swallow that stuff all day, every day. But if you take it in, then it makes you stronger spiritually. And I'm not talking about religion. I mean, your essence, your core, your constitution. If you're willing to be that mom, that's why I don't know how my mom had nine of us, but I can remember a moment my daughter, I was trying to give her a lesson and telling her a story I experienced thinking it would help her. And she had this look on her face. And I was like, this is not resonating for you. She was like, yeah, because your story is not my story. I was like, and I said, you're right. I said, my story is not your story. Tell me your story. My mother would have never done that, y'all. Because that was her generation. But in this generation, it was for me to take everything wonderful that my mother gave me and then where she didn't do well to lift that up for my own daughter. And I told my daughter, you're going to have your cross to bear if you have children. Whatever I didn't give you, you're going to have to work on because it shifts with every generation. And it just made me stronger because I had to really look at who I was as a human to her and then our two nephews and make shifts to be accountable because you only get one chance with your children. You only get one chance. And so you have to be willing to stand there. It also made me better to students. And I remember my daughter telling my students, you're welcome for letting you borrow my mom. But I took her with me on that journey. So being a mother grew me up in ways that I thought I was grown up, but also tending to students, because your students will also tell you what you're teaching well and what you're not. That process of nurturing can really grow you up. And so that changed my life forever, and I wouldn't have it any other way. And I don't like teaching, but I love opening the door for students to see themselves.
Wow. So they say mothers are miracles walking, and I am witnessing miracles with both you and Keisha each and every time we connect. And doesn't our world need so much more of these types of miracles? Yeah. So we can't begin to thank you enough for this powerful justice journey today to learn how to stand and to dance as well. And I know I'm marinating in everything that you have said today because it is so incredibly powerful and I want to soak it all in. And Keisha, I'm wondering, what are you learning from today's podcast conversation?
Oh my goodness, Nzinga. You have hit a lot of hot spots in my life, my friend. That self-care, super powerful. I might be connecting with you later to get some tips on that. The mother, you know, when you said our kids kind of, make us more spiritual. So deep and so true, because it's such a privilege to be a mom. And so many people don't get that privilege, and my heart hurts so much for them. But it's such a, you know, just an honor. And you do learn from them every day. And you learn that you are not as smart of a human as you thought you were. Every day. My one-year-old teaches me that. And my grandmother used to tell me, you know, you're so connected with education, and education is such an important part of your life. My grandmother used to tell me that education will give you more power and enable you to be more self-reliant than anything else in this world. And you have exemplified that in your journey and in your work. And you've seen opportunities and you've taken them, and you've risen to the desires of your community to lead. Your work will inspire so many young women and offer them a chance to change the direction of their lives for the better. They probably don't even realize what you're doing for them at this point in their lives. Such incredible work and influence in your voice and in your advocacy. And I'm wondering, do you have any final thoughts that you'd like to share with our audience?
Just to remember that it is a process and a journey. It is a process and a journey, and you have to recenter yourself all the time, and that is good. As long as you're recentering yourself, I don't always get it right. Sometimes I have to call a sister friend and say, tell me what you think. And that's really important to not feel like you have to know everything. But to ask somebody, right? You know, as we used to say, you know, ask somebody. And so stay on the journey and the process, and do the self-talk that says, you know what, I need to time myself out. That's my favorite thing. I give my own self timeouts, like, oh, it's time for an Nzinga timeout. And so timing yourself out so you can recenter yourself, because I do think we're all on a divine path. And that is to get ourselves in alignment with the universe so that we can be our best selves, so that every gift that the universe has given to our spirit, that we can get to that alignment, we can get to that personal transformative process. And I think that is what one of my professors calls is the process of illumination. And that where you're, you know, you are trying to get yourself into that brightest light, that everything that's spirit about you, it shines through. And so that's becoming a better human being, so that you do connect to that spirituality. And I would just say, stay in the process. Even if you have to walk away for a second, come back and stay in the process and find different things to keep you in the process. Have the gratitude jar, have the writing, have the meditation, have the walking, and have multiple things in your toolkit, you know, in your jewelry box, you know, to put on and to wear, you know, get by some water. But process and journey is so important. And if you have to stop on your journey to realign, you got to do that, but stay in the process.
That's beautiful. That's amazing. And dance.
Don't forget. Turn it up loud.
Turn it up. Yes.
Loud and dance.
Yes. We can't thank you enough for joining us today and spending just a little bit of time with us, sharing your wisdom and your story. It's beautiful.
There is no doubt that everyone is engaged in deep reflection. And again, this pattern of hopefully doing a little dance, or if not, a good walk out there to feed that soul. And you mentioned executive coaching earlier. So of course, we're going to connect with a coaching question, as we always do on the Honor Roll. And so today's question is, how might you learn to stand in the process of illumination and set your intentions in doing so? We want all our listeners and leaders to know how much we appreciate you. You are fierce with your message of courage, determination, and championing.
Yes. And that's a great question, my friend. You always come up with such amazing questions for our audience. Please join us for our next podcast, where we're going to highlight yet another Shero in education. And don't forget to follow our hashtag TL Honor Role, that's R-O-L-E, and answer that coaching question that Frances just threw out. And until then,
be fierce,
and be formidable.
The Tech and Learning's Honor Roll podcast is produced by Keisha Ray, Francis Gibson, and Christine Weiser. Audio production by Mitchell Tulin and AV Nation. Tech and Learning's Honor Roll theme music is by Madison Van Gundy. Find more episodes on techlearning.com and follow us at #TLHonorRoll. That's TL Honor R-O-L-E.